Chaf in the Shorin. That was enough for Shemitah for today. We still have to learn a little bit more about how to deal with Shemitah. The Mishkal HaChasidus. Mashitzorech, we're up to Perek Chaf. Mashitzorech Levoyer Ata Hu Mishkal HaChasidus Hazeh. How to weigh out what is real Chasidus and what's not. V'hu Inyan Ikri Ma'od Ma'od. And if you want to really be a chassid and do this midah, this is crucial. The teda be'emesh, zoi ha'malocha ha'kosha shebechassidus. This is the most difficult part of chassidus. Ki dakuso rav. It's very, very fine and subtle. V'yesh li'yasser bedover hazeh k'nisa gedola. Al-kei nimtzei sakonosu atzuma, ki harbei dvorim tovin yuchal ha'yetzel rachi kilu he'mroim. The Yetzirah can convince you that a lot of good things are bad. And the Yitzhara can convince you that a lot of things that are wrong are mitzvahs. I'll give examples in a minute. In order to really make this what's the word I'm looking for?
Work.
What?
Work.
No, it's not an accounting, but a
calculation.
What?
Calculation.
Calculation, that's a better word. That's not exactly the word I'm looking for, but it's good enough. In order to calculate clearly whether something is in fact chasidus and a mitzvah, or chasidus that looks like a mitzvah and is really an aveira, you need three things. Shealibo yosher, shebelvavo shelotia pinyosu elalasos hanachas ruach lefonav yisborach, velo zula zeklal. You have to have kavon l'shem shemayim. Because if you're moved by your desires, you have negiyas, you're not going to be able to make the right
evaluation.
That's what I'm looking for. But you're not going to be able to evaluate things properly. Thank you. You get $50.
Okay.
Not for me. It's a little bird that comes out of it.
That was $100.
Except for
okay, in order to make the right evaluation, you have to be objective. And that's very difficult to be objective. Everybody has their negias and sees things the way they want to see them. Even if you're objective, you have to be able to look into things and weigh them out and see all of the options and all of the conditions. And want to come out with what is right and true. Okay, so you need first to start out to be objective, because otherwise you could really investigate. And all your investigation is worthless because you're seeing things the way you want to see them. You're not seeing them the way they really are. That's why it says that there's an idea of asking advice even from somebody who knows less than you. Because the main purpose of advice is not to get information. It's to get a objective view of what you are evaluating and considering. Usually people make decisions not objectively, and they think that they've really investigated the issue and have come to a really intelligent decision, when in fact that's not the case at all. The Meiri says that the main idea of advice is that you should be shown a real objective picture of the issue that you're trying to make a decision. I'd always like to give an example. I don't know when we spoke about this last here, but I've spoken about it recently in a lot of places. So I'm not sure if I spoke out here. I don't think so. I'll give you an example. Somebody has to make a decision where they're going to move. They have to move to another neighborhood. And they have three options. Okay. So they want to make a really intelligent decision. So they weigh out the pros and cons of each option. And the one where the pros outweigh the cons, right, more than any of the other options, that's the one they should choose. That's a normal way of making a really objective decision. So people think that they investigate all three options, they look at the pros and the cons, and then they come to a decision based on that. But they're fooling themselves. Because deep down, one of those options is what you really want. Whether it's right or wrong, but that's what you want. You like the house better, you like what's it called, you know, whatever it is. Okay. And therefore, what a person goes into his mind, if you're not objective, is you see that option in the most bright context, only see the positive, play down the negative. The other two options, which deep down you don't want, right, you see the negatives more intensely and the positives less intensely. So now when you make your list, right, you have this option has such great positive points and very little negative. The other ones have so much negative and little positive, so you know, you made an objective decision, you pick this one. But really, if you would look at it really objectively, you'd see a lot more negative about the thing that you want, right, than you were able to see, and a lot more positive about the things you didn't want, right? And then you could really make a decision that's objective. So asking advice, you're getting an objective view of the options. You not necessarily need to be told what to do. The main thing of advice is you should be able to see the options, right, clearly, that then you can make an objective, intelligent decision. Because if you don't have someone else show you what the options are, you're going to see them colored the way you want to see them. And then you think you're making a decision that's based on objectivity, and you're really not. You're making it based on what you really want things to be. So therefore, you need two things. You need to be able to investigate and see all the options, right? For that, you need to be able to take time out and really investigate something. But you also have to start out by being objective. Because if you're not objective, you'll think that you've made an investigation you really didn't. The Acher Kozos, after you have both of those things, then you should, what's it called, put your trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then you should ask for Siyata Dishmaya. After you do everything you can do to try and discern and evaluate whether what you're doing is right and proper, then ask for Siyata Dishmaya that the Rabbanu Shalom guide you. Because if you, in other words, there's a rule that the Rabbanu Shalom helps people who do their Hishtadlus. So you have to do everything in your power to come to the right decision. After you've done everything in your power, then the Rabbanu Shalom will kick in and help you and give you Siyata Dishmaya. But if you don't do everything in your power to try to make the proper decision, the Rabbanu Shalom is not going to give you that decision on his own, and without you making the Hishtadlus. If you're missing one of these conditions, then you're not going to ever be able to function in a perfect manner and be able to do what's real chassidus. The karev hu likosher v'lipol, and not only that, not only won't you be able to reach the proper, perfect decisions, but you most probably are going to fail. The hainu oi makavon lo siyam uvcheres zocha, either your intentions won't be pure, oi misrashu min ha'iyun v'mashiyuchu la'ayin, right? Or if you're not going to really investigate things properly and use all your faculties of being discerning, right, then you're going to come out with the wrong decision. And if you don't really ask for Siyata Dishmaya and think you can do it on your own and you won't get the Siyata Dishmaya, then surely you'll fail. So all these conditions are necessary for a person to really make proper decisions. It's really scary because we all have to make decisions all the time. A lot of decisions we make affect other people, right? Like our children or our family or people in authority positions. And how many people can really say that they really have these three, you know, pillars, right? And they're really making decisions based on these three pillars. Very, very scary. Okay.
This is, he only explains this for Mishka Chassidus.
Right, because other things are more clear. Other things, Chassidus, as he's going to explain, depends on a lot of very subtle considerations. One of the other, midos are almost black and white. There's mutter and usser, right? And there's a shulchan aruch or whatever, and it's hard to fool yourself. But when it comes to chassidus, it's not black and white, as we learned till now. It's all very subjective kinds of things that apply in different situations to different people. It's not black and white. And therefore, since there's a lot of gray areas, here the place to make a mistake is the greatest. That's why he mentioned
it. What was Maisim B'Kol Yom, what comes up all the time, is not always Ufni Mishon Sadin.
Yeah, I'm saying, okay, fine. But for a normal person, it's easier to have those three conditions where things at least are black and white. It's harder to fool yourself. In this, it's easier to fool yourself. So you need those three conditions for other things. But there, it's much easier to have them. Here, it's much more difficult to have them, as you'll explain. Because here, things that look really good could be really bad. And things that look really bad could be really good. And for normal things, not like that. Normal things, there's hagadoros. You have a shulchan aruch, you have whatever, which means magdir, what's right and what's wrong. And now you just have to try to be honest with yourself. Here, it's much, much more difficult. Because you can fool yourself a lot easier where there's no black and white.
Okay. So the second one and the third one, l'chora, seems an easier problem to deal with. But the first one, if you don't feel that your lev is yasher, and
right,
I mean,
everybody thinks their lev is yasher, right?
No, I think the opposite. I mean, how many of us can say that everything we do is much l'shem Shemayim, and that lev is yasher, and we don't have any negiyos by anything. So that means we just forget the other two.
No, just again, that's why. If you want to know if you're doing it without negiyos, ask advice from somebody who is not nogeya to the same thing. He'll have his negiyos, but when it comes to you, he doesn't have. Classic example I'd like to give that it's possible. Is something hit me, we did speak about this, but okay, in any case, that the Medrash says that one of the chatoyim that Nadav and Avihu were guilty of is shalom notlu eitza zemizeh. They didn't ask advice one from the other. On the surface, that's ridiculous. Both of them came to the conclusion to bring this eitz zara independently. So what would have helped if Nadav asked Avihu, he had this great idea, I want to bring this eitz zara. And I know he will say, yeah, same idea. So what's he going to do? He's going to, for sure. What would it help if they asked each other? The answer is that if they would have asked each other, each one would have put himself in the other one's place. What would I do, right, if I was you? Now, if I was you, I was you without your negiyas, I surely would see it's not the right thing to do. And the other one would have said the same thing. They only thought it was right to do because they were looking for with their negiyas. If they could divest themselves of their negiyas and put themselves in somebody else's place, without their negiyas, it would be different. And we all see that. I think very, very, sometimes we do things that we have justifications for and we think is fine. When you see somebody else do that exact same thing, you know it's wrong. Right? It happens, and I think the Baal Shem Tov says that sometimes that's what the Rabban Shalom does to make a person see his mistakes. That you witness what somebody else does, right, which you think when you did it, it was okay, and you see clearly by them, since you're in the gears, that it's completely not right. I mean, that's what happened with David HaMelech, when Nosson HaNovi gave him that example of the rich person and the poor person or whatever, and then he told him, it's you. And yeah, when you're known the gears, you can see clearly it's not right what you did. But when it's nogea to you, you see it completely differently. So, that's why it's a good idea to ask advice. That's why it's not a good idea to rely on your thinking that you're objective. Ask somebody else who's not nogeya and see what they say. But you have to find somebody who can divest themselves of their negiyas and not say, what would I do if I had that problem? Because then they have their negiyas. They have to say, if I were you with all your circumstances, what would I do? That's not so easy. So you got to find somebody who can give advice. Okay. Ach im shloshtem yishmar karoy tmimus hamachshav. If you keep all these three things, you'll have objective, what's it called, thinking. Iyun. And you'll have the ability and the desire to really investigate an issue will be tachem. And you'll ask for siyata d'shmaya, oz yelech betech be'emes v'lu yuna l'kora. Then you'll be successful. Hu ha'dover shomer chana b'nevuasa, ragle chasid of yishmar. Right, the Rabban Hashem will protect the chasidim and make sure they remain chasidim. Again, why chasidim? Because that's where the danger is greatest. In things that are black and white, right, the danger is less. It's still there, but it's less. It's harder to fool yourself when somebody can show you a sif in Shulchan Aruch that says that what you're doing is no good or good. But it's easier when you're talking about midas chasidus, where nobody can show you black and white, it's good or not good. It's a very subtle determination. The David kmo kein omar v'lo yazov es chasidov la'olam nishmeru. V'hinei ma shetzorech lahavin hu, ki ein lodun divrei ha-chasidus al mareyan harishon. Chasidus you can't judge with your first impression. Because the first impression of what is chasidus, what's lifnei meshuras hadin, may be totally distorted. Because there's more than just judging it on its own merits. When it comes to mitzvahs and averas, so you judge it, is it a mitzvah, is it an avera? Can I do it or can't do it? When it comes to mitzvahs chasidus, so there's no chiyuv to do it, and there's no isur not to do it. So now you have to decide, not only is the thing on its own merits good, what are the repercussions? What's going to come from it? Right now, right, maybe a great thing to what's it called, to run, I'll give an example. We're going to see these examples. But things that look like a mitzvah chasidus, but in the end maybe are not, maybe are going to lead to things that are not proper. An example that, in shul, okay? It looks like a mitzvah chasidus to run and go to kiss the Torah and to follow it to the bima, okay? Even if you're sitting the other end of the shul, to come, and nobody should make any judgments about anybody who does it or doesn't do it, whatever I'm talking about. But, okay, so I do it, and I think this is a great thing to do. But what are the implications? Now other people are going to see me do it, and they're going to want to do it too, because now they're going to feel that they're not tzaddikim. Now, if the whole shul moves out of its place to go and kiss the Torah will never get to the bima. Right? It's going to be terrible tircha de tzibura, because the entire shul now moved into one area, which is anyway not shayach, and people are going to be pushing, kicking, and whatever, and in order to get this tremendous, covered HaTorah or whatever. So maybe I have to hold myself back because of what's going to be the repercussions. I can't just look at what's now. What's going to come from it? Right? Is it going to end up to be Kavod HaTorah, or is it going to not be so much Kavod HaTorah? That's not going to be what's proper. A lot of times I have to make the cheshbon, that 5-minute shiur in the end of davening. Right? So nice, we're learning during the winter. What's it called? Shmiras Haloshim. Right? What could be wrong with a Chafetz Chaim or a tshuva here and there? But sometimes it's so late, right, that another 5 minutes is really aggravating to people. So instead of bringing Kavod HaTorah, because people are going to learn a little bit more about Shmiras HaLashon, what will it cause? That they'll speak Lashon Hara about the rabbi, about whatever, about the shul, right, because of another 5 minutes, right, and they're in shul already in prison for who knows how long because of it's Rosh Chodesh and it's a bar mitzvah and somebody had yahrzeit to what's it called, whatever the reasons are, there's a million reasons why davening gets elongated. So that extra 5 minutes is like the straw that broke the camel's back. So instead of leading to something positive, it's going to lead to the opposite. So on the other hand, right, after 120 years, after where you say, how come you didn't teach people for 5 minutes and you deprived them of 5 minutes of learning they could have had? And what's going to be? So it's a very delicate balance. And sometimes the negius of, I want to get home and eat my chalent also, right? So it's about, right? You know, have all these grandiose ideas of why it's the proper thing, you know, not to do it. And really, you know, it's the chalent that's making the decision and not me. So it's not simple. But you can't just judge things on how it appears right now. Like, what's going to be the repercussions? And there's a lot more serious things than what I just described.
Right.
So that's why it says, the loss of love, a person's going to have the idea of a din v'cheshbon. One of the ideas of din v'cheshbon, the gross is something different. But I always like to say din v'cheshbon means you're going to have to give an accounting and a judgment. If you did right, you did wrong. But it's not only going to be judged on, at that moment, was it right or wrong? What were the repercussions? What was the cheshbon? And that's a bo cheshbon. Let's see the bigger picture. Shchar mitzvah keneged hefseda. Right? Let's see the final tally. Is this going to be positive or negative? Right now it may be positive, but what the repercussions are going to make it negative, and vice versa. So, and the place we learned that from, bo cheshbon, is from a pasuk that says that Sichon captured the city of what's it called, Cheshbon. It was a city that belonged to Moab. So he captured that city. He did it for his own personal reasons. Okay, but in the end, it was good for Klal Yisrael, because we weren't allowed to capture cities from Moab. We weren't allowed to start up with them or take any of their land. But once Sichon conquered it, it was laundered. And it became not Moab anymore, it became Sichon's. And we were allowed to take land from Sichon. So the ultimate repercussions of what happened, right, even though on the surface it looked like a very personal thing that Sichon was doing, in the bigger picture, it was for the sake of Klal Yisrael. So you can't always look at what the immediate result is, what's going to be the repercussions. They say that the Brisker Rav said about his father, he said, my father, when making decisions, you know, political decisions or what's it called, things that cloud decisions, he could see how this decision would have its effect 50 years in the future. What the effect would be 50 years. He said, I can barely see maybe 20 years into the future. My father could see 50 years into the future. Not a Navi, but he just was smart enough to see what the repercussions are. And sometimes what a positive thing right now, but if the repercussions are negatives, then that's the cheshbon. That's the cheshbon. Not that we hold from either of these sides, but the whole cheshbon of going up to Harabayas, right? So yeah, we have to show our ribonut, and we have to, what's it called, and maybe there's places to go where it's okay to go, and the people will, whatever the cheshbonos are, but what are the repercussions? Is it worth going up to Harabayas and exercising your ribonut when you're inciting, what's it called, the Arabs, who you know are anyway animals, and they don't need too much incitement to act like animals? They're para adam, right? And look what comes from it. So to blame them, you know, blame the Chevrei Knesset who went up to Harabayit, right, for what's going on, is a little mugzam, but it's not totally not true, right? What are the benefits, right? Fine. Maybe it's a right thing in their mind to do, okay? Maybe even halachically it could be, if done properly, could be okay too. But is it worth it? Is it worth it? So somebody said to me, so then we shouldn't be here bechlal, right? Because no matter what we do. But there's things that the benefit outweighs the detriment, right? If we leave all of Yehuda v'Shomron, right, and give it to them, so we'll be more in danger. So not going to make less danger. But over here, what is the big mile of having to go? Right now, we're in Golis. And Harabayas is a mosque. That's what's there. We're, what's it called, offending their religion of going into their mosque, right? Or the area of their mosque, which they hold is an offense to them. So the mosque says, accept the fact that Rabban Shalom said, if we not knock down the mosque, is one thing. They had the sense not to do that then, because it would have started World War III. And they knocked down the mosque after the Six-Day War. So they had enough sense to know that that's not something to do right now. We're not capable of doing that. So there's a mosque up there. So why in the world? And the Maisha, we do have ribonut over there. So we can't exercise it. And what is the big deal not, right? What is going to hurt Jews if they don't go up to Harabayas? So maybe even if it's a right thing to do, and you have some positive thing, the negative outweighs. What's going to come from that? What's going to be the repercussions? Maybe outweigh any possible benefit there could be. But you can't make decisions if you don't see what the repercussions are going to be and you don't care about them. So a million things like that. So who knows, you know, what the... That's the cheshbon, din v'cheshbon. Okay? Ki lefamim ha-maisa bi'asmo yiratov. Sometimes what you're doing looks good, and it may even really be good. Ulefisha ha-told those roles, yischayiv lanicho. But because the repercussions are going to be bad, better not to do it. It's not going to lead to something. It's going to lead, the negative outweighs the positive. Vimyasa osi yachote v'lo chosid. And therefore, if you do do it, you're not going to be a chosid. You're going to be a sinner. Because you're going to be responsible for the negative repercussions. Even though right now it looks like great chasidus, what you're doing. And there's a million examples of that that everybody can think of themselves. Here's an example. Hine maisa gedalya ben achikam. Golu le'inyonenu. Shemitne rov chasidu so shalolodon is yishmuel lekat chova. Oh, so the Kabbalah Shemhara, right? Gedalia thought he was being a big chassid, right? What did he do? He heard from that, what's it called, that Yishmael, then Netanya, what's it called, wanted to kill him. He was told, right? So he's a big tzaddik. I don't want him to Kabbalah Shemhara, right? He thought on the Katzchus, not really true, or whatever. If he had accepted it, and he allowed to be choshish, and protected himself, then he wouldn't have been killed, and the results for Klal Yisrael were horrendous, because we could have remained in Eretz Yisrael, in Golus, under Bavel, right, with some kind of semblance of a community here. Once Gedalia was killed, everybody ran to Mitzrayim or whatever, and that was the end. So had he been a little bit less of a tzaddik, don't be such a tzaddik harbe, right? I don't want to be kabbal lashon hara. You don't want to kabbal lashon hara. You're allowed to be choshish. So you should have been choshish. But no, he wants to be a big tzaddik, don mekav schos, not mekav lashon hara, looks like chassidus. In the end, it caused such terrible repercussions that he's responsible for that. Gedal. Right? Omer li Yochanan ben Korah, sheker after dover al Yishmael. So he said, no, I'm not going to mekav that. You're speaking lies against your blaspheming Yishmael. Umar Goram shemesu, the nibzer Yisrael, he died. Because of that, Klai Yisrael was scattered all over the world. The kovag nachlosam hanishara, gachalosam hanishara, and the last little coal of spark that existed in Eretz Yisrael was lost. Ukvar yichas akosa ve'lov harigas anoshim asher nergu kilu hargam hu. And the Torah can gives him the guilt. He's guilty of all those people who were killed. Because he didn't take precautions, because he was such a big tzaddik, he didn't want to listen to lashon hara, and he didn't want to be, and he wanted to be done somebody who he shouldn't have been done. Lekatzchus, right? For that, he's held responsible for the repercussions. Ukemamorim zal al pi es kol pigrei haanoshim asher hiko biyad gedalia. He didn't kill anybody, but his tzidkus, his big chasidus, ended up these people should be killed. So you're responsible, right? So if you did it. If you don't see what the repercussions are from the things you do, right? Especially people in authority positions, right? The repercussion can be tremendous, and you think you're doing something good, and 5 years from now, right? Because of what you did, is a chain reaction, and it leads to terrible things, right? I mean, what's it called? What Sharon did, or what anybody thinks? What's it called with Gush Katif, right? If somebody could see into the future, what would be, right? What are they responsible for? Everything that happened from then, the domino is unbelievable. So anybody who convinced themselves that this is the right thing to do or whatever, and they saw that, you know, we're going into a golden age over here where the Arabs is going to, you know, just bend over backwards because we're such nice people. And we look what it caused. How many wars it caused. How many deaths it caused. How much political problems because of that. So you gotta be able to see what the repercussions. It's very difficult. Okay. The Habayis Hasheni Gamu Karavai De Chasidus Kazer. Same thing that happened by Hasheni. That was Bayis Rishon. Ashalon Yishko Vemishkot Sedek. Vemaisa Dvar Kamsa. Amu Sover Abon Lekruve. After the whole Maisa Bar Kamsa. So now it came to the Chachamim. You know, what's it called? Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll leave this because I want to speak about it. It's interesting. It's
yeah,
even though before Tisha B'Av, right, a while to go. But Nir Sashem, it's an interesting thing to dissect what happened over there. And the Gemara says two reasons why it was destroyed. One is Anfinstanuso, Shal Zachari bin Afkulis, and the other one was Kamsa bar Kamsa. They seem to be contradictory things. We'll see, it's not. It's all one idea. Okay, we'll start with this next week. There will be a show next week. I'll be back by Wednesday, Nir Sashem.